Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's a premise to everything we do at Evolver. It's that we're in the midst of the creation of a new kind of global spiritual culture. More and more people are connecting to Source through meditation, yoga, plants, psychedelics. More people are encountering ceremonial practices or healing modalities that shift their awareness of what it means to be human. Of course, you might come across a lineage that speaks to your core and commit to it. It could be Tibetan Buddhism or Amazonian shamanism. And that's all you need. But most of us are weaving together our own personalized connection to Source from many threads, while at the same time recognizing a common ground that undergirds all of these approaches to the spiritual aspect of existence. It's a post-guru moment. We are each other's teachers. That's the idea behind our new learning community, Evolver Awakening. It's a website with video classes featuring Evolver's best teachers, like Alberto Villoldo, Ellen Goldberg, Itzhak Beery, Mitch Horowitz, Hank Wesselman, and many others. It's also a community platform for you to connect with others on the path. Nothing quite like this has ever been attempted before. A global community of seekers from many backgrounds, sharing and discovering a variety of traditions and practices. It's an exciting adventure, and you're invited to come along. Check it out at evolverawakening.com. I look forward to seeing you there. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to The Evolver, sponsored by The Alchemist Kitchen, hosted by Ken Jordan.
Those of us who walk the consciousness path will say things like, everything is energy, or we're all interconnected. And there are moments during meditation practice or at the ayahuasca circle when that truth will hit and resonate. But a few days later, that realization can fade. That immediate, visceral knowing becomes more memory than certainty. And as we return to our familiar patterns, while the way we see the world might have shifted a degree, we find ourselves experiencing a material reality that is largely the same as the one we thought we were leaving behind. This is particularly true when it comes to our bodies. What else is as primal as our relationship to our own health? We know when we feel good, and what we have to do to make ourselves feel good. If you've been raised in the West, all your life you've had certain ideas ingrained in you about what gets your body to be at a high level of performance. The notions that everything is energy and we're all interconnected don't play much of a role here. But that may be changing as more people are becoming more sensitive to the currents of the invisible and the ways that what we don't see shift our understanding of the things we do. Spiritual practices can refocus our awareness to aspects of the spectrum that you hadn't even realized were there. My guest today, Dr. Linda Lancaster, has been developing a practical medical modality that is based on fundamental spiritual truths. From Linda's perspective, that everything is energy has direct implications for our own health. The ways that we're all interconnected affects how illness manifests. She lays out her approach to wellness in a new book, Harmonic Healing, Restore Your Vital Force for Lifelong Wellness. Her program addresses the toxic pollution that we're subjected to around the clock and offers clear and doable practices for cleansing your system of the chemicals, heavy metals, radiation, and parasites that weaken your defenses, slow you down, and open you to disease. But Linda goes further, integrating a rare spiritual insight with lab-based Western medicine techniques, and she's come up with some fascinating innovations that point towards the medicine of the future. This is a powerful, thought-provoking conversation about the territory where Western medicine and Eastern metaphysics converge. It's a landscape that many more people are being drawn to by the day. Dr. Linda Lancaster is a board-certified naturopath physician and homeopath. She's been in practice since 1981 and founded Light Harmonics Institute, an energy medicine clinic and educational center based in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Her training includes classical homeopathy, radionics, medical radiesthesia, subtle energy healing, nutrition, herbal medicine, Ayurveda, and detoxification methods. She's treated more than 10,000 patients in over 30 years of practice. Dr. Lancaster was Yogi Bhajan's personal physician and remained by his side until his passing. He honored her with the Conscious Healer and Humanitarian Award in 2002. As our understanding of what it means to be human undergoes an upgrade, the consequences for our approach to physical health will necessarily be transformed. Where will that lead us? The map is only starting to be drawn. But I guarantee it's going to look a lot different than what you used to see on HouseMD. Everyone seems to be talking about CBD these days, that is, cannabidiol, the non-psychoactive component of cannabis. The buzz is that CBD doesn't make you high, like THC does. But for conditions such as stress and anxiety, health professionals are increasingly recommending it as an alternative to pharmaceuticals. And scientific research is showing that CBD is highly anti-inflammatory, so it can help with pain relief. What does the scientific research say about CBD? Research centers in the United States and elsewhere are studying the effects of CBD on a variety of ailments. Scientists refer to CBD as a promiscuous compound because it offers therapeutic benefits in many different ways while tapping into how we function physiologically and biologically on a deep level. Extensive preclinical research and some clinical studies have shown that CBD has strong antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, antidepressant, antipsychotic, and neuroprotective qualities. What's the best way to take CBD? CBD-rich cannabis oil products can be taken sublingually, orally, as edibles, lozenges, beverages, tinctures, and gel caps, or applied topically. Concentrated cannabis oil extracts can also be heated and inhaled with a vape pen. Inhalation is good for treating acute symptoms that require immediate attention. The effects can be felt within a minute or two and typically last for a couple of hours. The effects of orally administered CBD-rich cannabis oil can last for 4 hours or more, but the onset of effects is much slower, like 30 to 90 minutes, than inhalation. Evolver is the proud papa of the Alchemist Kitchen, a botanical dispensary located in the Bowery District of New York, where you can find the finest quality CBD products available without THC. We also make our own premium CBD under the Plant Alchemy label. Our producer Jose's mom uses it for stress, anxiety, and high blood pressure. Our plants are grown in both field and greenhouse environments, cultivated using living soil organic principles, leveraging strictly organic inputs, and in full compliance with the controls defined by the Colorado Department of Agriculture. Our plants are some of the highest CBD cannabis varieties currently known. You can find out more about CBD by visiting the Alchemist Kitchen website at thealchemistskitchen.com. There's an S in there. And searching for CBD. There are articles on the blog, an FAQ, and a selection of vetted products. Or stop by our spot at 21 East 1st Street in Manhattan, between Bowery and 2nd Avenue, and talk to one of our staff herbalists. At the shop, tell them you listen to the Evolver podcast and receive a 10% discount on any product on the shelves. Linda, how would you describe what you do as a doctor as different than what other doctors, as people know them, might do?
I evaluate the energy field. I evaluate the electromagnetic energy of our vital force, or what I call the etheric body. So nothing happens in the physical until it happens in the pre-physical.
What do you mean by pre-physical? Like, what is that etheric body?
Okay. We have our body of organs and hands and bones and blood. However,
which is what most doctors focus on.
Yes. It's a very physical examination. Now, if we come to it from the place of understanding that the etheric body is actually the life force that makes that physical body alive.
And this is what we would say in the Indian traditions is prana, or in Chinese medicine would be qi. I mean, we're talking about that kind of energetic aspect,
yes.
Right?
Yes. And but we're looking at it more from, well, my training is a combination of anthroposophical, Ayurvedic, and yogic. So yes, it's the prana, and it's also this life force that integrates. In fact, the etheric body is threads of light that's intertwined into our physical body. Without that ether or etheric field, we are not alive. When we leave, we go with our etheric body, but our physical makeup stays. It's imbibed with this energy. And physicists and scientists are trying to find words to describe it and to understand it. And it's a bit mind-boggling, because unless we understand where ether comes from and acknowledge that there is a higher force and there is a cosmos, that is our connection, is our etheric body to the cosmos.
So would a scientist, say, be looking for that kind of energetic substrate in the cellular level, in the electromagnetic force of the field of your body? I mean, are there ways of measuring it with an instrument?
Yes. I mean, you can see it on Kirlian photography. You can also, with certain kinds of biofield measurements, they can read the energy of the cells, because every cell in our body are like little batteries, positive and negative flow. And that positive and negative flow creates the cell's integrity. So the balance of this positive and negative makes us healthy. If we go not enough magnetism or too much electricity, in the case of too much Wi-Fi and electrical currents, we will get affected. Our cells will be rotating too fast or aggravating. Or if we're exposed to heavy metals or chemicals, it will go more towards this low a magnetic field, so we lose the electricity or we lose the energy of the cells.
So this can be measured. Could I take, is there a device?
There are devices.
Okay, wait a second, put it on my arm, it's like, whoa, I'm a little low here, I'm a little off balance.
Well, the physicists can have those kinds of devices, but you can feel it with your hands.
Oh yeah.
You can feel the energy field. If you put your two hands together, and then you slowly, slowly move them apart and feel.
Well, yeah, there is something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could go and feel how strong your field is between your palms of your hands.
Right. That's
energy.
So how do you
and
learn how to...
And that's the chi, the ball, and the, you know,
right.
This is energy.
In Tai Chi, you create these energetic balls,
spheres.
These chi spheres.
Yes.
Between your palms in this way as a kind of an exercise
but
to learn.
But you can go like that, yeah. on your body. You can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
We have an etheric body, and that etheric body is ether. Ether is the primordial sound. Ether is in all space.
We were talking about this before. You know, part of the power of the work that you're doing is developing a vocabulary to describe this energetic perspective in a 21st century language that reflects, on the one hand, our more scientific worldview in the way that we live in the world today, but that also is cognizant of these ancient lineages, these traditions, these traditional ways of addressing the energetic health of the body or of the environment, I would imagine, as well, and of the, you know, it's a shift in perspective, right?
It's a flow of energy that we're looking at that creates this body. Mm-hmm. And it's a flow of energy from our cells, our electromagnetic field. The Earth has an electromagnetic field. We have an electromagnetic field. We are nature. So is the Earth. When we are interfered with by man-made radiation and man-made chemicals, this interferes with our energy flow. These things interfere with our energy flow. And that's what we're looking at least I've been looking at for almost 40 years, about how these interferences, which are mostly unseen, are affecting us. We are affected by chemical reactions or a disruption in the electromagnetic field, whether it be wireless radiation or negative thoughts.
Negative thoughts?
Yeah, well, that's radiations. You know, when we say, as we're speaking now, our voice has electromagnetic energy because there's a life force in it.
But if I have a thought and I don't share it?
It's okay. You have intention. It'll get there.
It comes out.
Yes.
You can pick it
so
up.
So make them good intentions so we can be part of this light energy that we are aware of. You know, we talk about etheric body. We talk about the etheric body.
I was just going to say, the word itself, what inspired you to use that word to describe this?
Well, that's part of radionic language. You know, the radionics has always treated the etheric body.
So you have to tell me what radionics is.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
It's the analysis and treatment from a distance.
By who?
By the person who is sending the treatment.
Okay.
It's by intention. With intention, just like prayer. Prayer is intention. The person gets it because of your own intention.
Got it.
So radionics therapy is very, very well known, more so in England than it is in America, only for many reasons. We should do just a show on radionics because it's fascinating. But when we look at the etheric body or the energy body, we're treating energy. We're analyzing energy because, as I said before, nothing happens in the physical until it happens in the etheric.
And so you can, when somebody comes into your office, a patient with a condition.
Yes.
How do you read the etheric body? What are you doing?
Okay. First of all, I can kind of defocus and see the field. But besides that, I can take a pulse reading. So with the pulse reading is really an energy reading. Whether it's Chinese pulse or Ayurvedic pulse, we're reading the energy field. It's not just taking the pulse of the heart beating. You're actually getting the flow between the points. You know, in an Ayurvedic pulse, we're reading the air, the fire, and the water with our three fingers. But that flow is indicative of how the ether flows through, because the ether is your first of the five elements that feeds the other elements.
So you're essentially trained to notice something in the pulse that the nurse at the local hospital here may not be paying close attention to when he or she takes a pulse of somebody in bed.
But, you know, I'm known for medical radiesthesia, and it's, of course, in my book about medical radiesthesia and reading radiations. I read radiations from a blood sample, dry blood sample, in a closed field. And I read the energy field coming off that blood sample from a distance. Now, what that means, we have to go a little far out here for some people, and for some other people will say, oh, that makes sense. It's always made sense to me. But the blood sample, as long as you are alive, has an energy field. No matter where you are on the planet, I can connect to that energy field and find out, is that the flu or do you have food poisoning? So it's a crystalline structure of you through a spot of blood that's dried, and that connection we can measure, and we can contact that energy field because we are one on the planet as part of the planetary information.
What you've been putting together as a practice, which you describe in your book,
yes,
is essentially weaving together these more esoteric spiritual ways of understanding our interconnection of all things and how we're all essentially part of the same flow or field on some level, while at the same time bringing instruments like blood samples
and a pendulum.
You use the pendulum on the blood sample, and maybe you want to parse that a little bit.
Well, of course, my training is in medicine and all holistic medicine and herbs and homeopathy. As you know, I've been a homeopath for 40 years. I use a pendulum because the pendulum has three movements: positive, negative, neutral. Now, when we hold the pendulum over the blood spot in a closed circle, which is a field, we can read the electromagnetic energy coming off the blood sample. If that person is no longer with us, no movement on the pendulum.
Are you serious?
I am.
That's crazy. That's interesting.
Because we're not asking questions.
No.
We're picking up the frequency.
So I got to ask. So does that mean that you had the blood sample of someone who had passed?
Yes.
And you were holding the pendulum over and nothing happened?
Nothing happened.
And you didn't know this beforehand?
Like we say in Brooklyn, nothing.
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 And then you called and you went, what's up with my pendulum? And I'm afraid that so-and-so passed last night. I mean, like, how did that happen for you? How did you first have that encounter?
My first encounter was a mother called me. Her son was hiking and he didn't come back.
Oh, wow.
And because I can find the person too on a map.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no reading.
And you had the blood sample?
Yes, patient. He fell off the mountain while he was hiking. That was the most profound experience that I've ever had.
And that must have opened up an interesting door for you into something.
Well, I always knew that to be true because if we're really reading the etheric energy, and etheric energy is the life force in the blood. Why the blood? Because the blood has the strongest potential for ether.
What does that mean, potential for ether?
I mean, it has the most strongest field of ether in the blood. You know, that's why the blood is so sacred in all traditions, because that is where the powerful etheric force is.
And when you use the word ether, I have to say, I keep flipping back to, prana or chi. Like, so I can have a context that's more familiar for me.
Yes.
That's just so interesting that, in fact, there's an energetic pulse.
Yes.
To the blood that is
beyond. Energetic frequency.
Frequency.
That is electromagnetic. That is positive, negative. And these cells are actually emanating this energy.
And so that's something you can actually measure in a lab.
Yes. But then we have the astral body, which is another energy field where our emotions are. Astral, connected to the stars. When we go to sleep at night, we go into the astral field, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
If we can get to sleep with these days. And then we have a mental field, which is a lot of the mindfulness that we're talking about. And that mental field can project. So we have a mental, emotional, physical, etheric body. And this is all connected through the ether, in the cosmos. Our etheric body comes in through our chakras. The subtle part of our endocrine system is the chakras. And that's how energy flows, with the flow of the chakras to the endocrine glands, which are our spark plugs telling our body what to do. So unless we look at, and that's what my hope is for this book, is unless we look at the subtle parts of us, we're just not going to get there, because things happen on the mental field, things happen on the emotional field, and we are being bombarded by pollution on the etheric field affecting our physical body.
The pollution on the etheric field.
Yes.
Right? Which is to say,
in our air, but ether is in air. Ether is in all the elements.
When you're saying a pollution, that's not just an energetic pollution. That's a physical pollution. There's an this is something that's electromagnetic waves in the atmosphere that are affecting us in a certain way, or certain poisons, toxics, heavy metals in the, in the food that we eat, or in, whatever, in the materials
air that we breathe.
The air that we breathe, the materials that we put around our body. We know in a much more traditional, maybe not the right word, say 20th century medical paradigm, that certain toxic things can effectively make you sick and give you cancer or whatever it might be, if they interact with you in a certain way, that they have a direct physical consequence. What you're suggesting is something on top of that.
Yes.
Okay. Can you explain that to me a little bit better? More for me?
Yes, there are physical things in our air. However, it is the disturbance first in our electromagnetic field that we experience it. We experience it first energetically. You walk into a store with fluorescent lights, you can feel it right away, because it's disturbing our electromagnetic field. And we suddenly get tired because our adrenal glands, or the base chakra, which is this will for physical life, this will for survival, the adrenals are there, go, wait, this is not normal. What's this fluorescent stuff? And then the adrenals go down. They kind of get exhausted, and then we get tired. And we're exposed on so many levels. However, I don't like to be a person who just says, we live in a polluted world. What are we going to do? Hide in a box? No, it's also a challenge that we're aware of, and we're going to deal with it by strengthening our electromagnetic field, and so that we can be strong enough to learn how to live in this new environment. But the best part is, at this very same time, there is a growth for spiritual work more than I've seen in my years since I was a yogi at 20 years old.
Oh, there's something definitely going on now. There's people are picking, and many people come to it because they have a physical issue that they need to address.
Healing is actually, or I believe healing should be simple. You be aware of your environment. Okay, you change your environment, get those cells balanced. Then there's no place for those low frequencies that create illness.
Well, so when you say change your environment, you mean move?
No.
Or do you mean changing your practices? Or?
Yeah. Well, change the environment at a cellular level means clear pollution, heavy metals, chemicals, radiation.
Out of your body or?
Yeah. Neutralize it.
Okay.
We do that with the baths. We use baths to neutralize it. Strengthen your electromagnetic field with good food. When I say good food, it doesn't matter if it's vegan, vegetarian, paleo. That's not important to me. What's important to me is that the food is organic and we eat lots of vegetables, because the strongest electromagnetic field is in our vegetables. So if the vegetables are grown, or the fruits or the plant food is grown in good organic soil, it's going to be rich with minerals. Minerals is where we get our electromagnetic energy, because minerals have an electrical frequency. That's food. That's the food that we should be nourishing. Nature heals nature. Mother Nature gave us everything that we need.
So you can fortify yourself, essentially.
Strengthen your field.
Strengthen your field through the foods that you eat.
Yes. The awareness of the foods we eat by blessing it and saying thank you.
Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. Why would that make any difference? The prayerful part.
Because we are blessing foods that's rich with electromagnetic energy. And you say, where did this food come from? It came from our earth, and it came from the cosmos, because those are the etheric forces that have come down to keep us connected to where we came from. So when you do that further acknowledgement, it becomes even more imbibed with energy. Our voice of blessing the food, our acknowledgement that we are not just physical, and that we're using, that we will take this energy from the food and carry it forth to do the energy and work that we're here to do.
So your intention in how you relate to the food that you eat,
yes,
will actually make a difference.
Yes.
In the energetic level of that food.
Yeah, what I've noticed is when I go out to a restaurant, maybe they're not all organic, but I'll bless my food. I'm not going to bring it up to the level of electromagnetically full potential of healing food, but I am going to bless it so that it's not harmful.
So, I mean, I just got to ask, is there any way to measure that?
There is.
I mean, do they do that? Have you done that?
I do it all the time. I measure food.
And before and after blessing?
Oh, yes.
And you can tell the difference?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, the medical radiesthesia, the way I teach it, my whole class can measure it, and we all get the same answers. When we measure aluminum has one number, and it's always that number. If that food has been wrapped in aluminum, it's going to be at the same number. And every single student, whether I have 50 students or 10 students in my classes, they're going to come up with the same number.
But after it's blessed, does the number go down?
After it's blessed, it goes up to a kind of a normal frequency. It's not going to enhance, but at least it's not going to cause harm.
So it helps to neutralize some of the harm.
Yes. Yes.
That's fascinating.
We are God, aren't we? We are God within. So let's use it. Here's another thing. You know, I keep, for some reason, I'm thinking of this Leonard Cohen song. He says, if you don't pray for the angels, they will not pray for you.
It's a great line.
So we are all connected. We are not only connected on the earth plane, but we are connected in the cosmos.
What I love about what you do is that you take these more abstract concepts that people can relate to on an emotional level.
Yes.
But you're bringing it into a physical manifestation through practice. And you're talking about how you can measure that, right? That's the piece that I think for a lot of people, they're not even aware is going on.
It's the bridge. I'm trying to bridge physical to etheric and to spiritual.
And to imbue people with an approach to health that reflects that interconnection.
Yes, I hope so.
When somebody comes into your practice with an illness, what kind of illness, generally speaking? Because I guess people come to you with all kinds of different things, right? But let's just pull one out of a hat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, people come to me for everything. Most people come in these days because they have low energy.
So these are chronic symptoms.
Chronic.
This is not like, oh.
Lyme's. Let's talk.
Say Lyme. Okay.
Lyme's. Mm-hmm. Lyme syndrome, which is a conglomeration of different symptoms. It started with the getting bit by a tick that had the Lyme's spirochete. And so that spirochete is rolling around the bloodstream. And I can easily measure that there's a spirochete in the blood sample or not. You know, that's no big deal. The problem that I find...
Many people actually have a challenge identifying for sure that they have Lyme.
They go
through a whole period of like, do I have it? I had a test.
There's no test. There is no test on the standard lab test whether they have Lyme's or not. But they can see the antibodies of Lyme, which is the co-infections of bacteria from the limes or spirochete living in our blood. So if the limes or spirochete is living in the blood for a while, you're going to have a whole load of bacteria, and very specific bacterias that can go into the joints and cause swelling, cause neurological symptoms, and so forth. And very understandable, the doctors use antibiotics to get rid of the bacteria. However, that's not the root cause. The root cause is the spirochete, and the spirochetes do not go away with antibiotics. So it's really an interesting dilemma, because there is no test that proves they're spirochetes, and they don't know how to treat it.
So then what do you do? I mean, first of all, you're saying you can find the spirochete in the test.
Yes.
All right. Which is something that I guess conventional doctors...
They don't look for that. They look for what's going on in the blood. And it's totally understandable. And some people do get better from that because their system is strong enough. However, there are lots of people who are not getting better. So I use, you know, I use something called a milk cleanse. People are, it's a big buzzword these days, is the milk cleanse or the goat milk cleanse. And I look at the spirochete as a parasite, a microscopic parasite. And we have been able to use the milk cleanse to neutralize that parasite. So it's 8 days on milk. Every 2 hours, you drink a glass of milk with the worm formula. Now, where does this come from? In the biblical days, the healers used to put people in a tub of milk so that the worms would come out and drink it, because worms and parasites love milk. So they're drinking, the parasites come out, drink the milk, and then we give them herbs, which are vermifuge. Vermifuge are antiparasitic herbs. And we find that there's no longer spirochetes in the blood. Now it's a matter of using natural methods to clean up the blood from bacteria. Usually underneath there's heavy metals. Usually there's chemicals. Usually there's radiation. So on all fronts, deal with your heavy metals, your chemicals, and your radiation, so you don't have an environment in your cells that a parasite likes, which is a low frequency.
So you were saying, as a baseline, that you want to, you know, get rid of the heavy metals and the radiation.
Yes.
And so, you know, which all of us are carrying.
We are exposed to all the time.
How complicated is it to clean up your body of that stuff so that you're more, you know, grounded and solid and resistant to these kinds of...
Well, it's ongoing because it's a challenge ongoingly. So I recommend to clear radiation a sea salt and baking soda bath. 20 minutes in a bath with a pound of sea salt and a pound of baking soda.
More than once?
Regularly, once a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Put your candle on, do your meditation, put some nice music, and relax in your bath. What a wonderful thing.
For 20 minutes.
20 minutes. You can put the timer on, Ken. No problem. But we should. I have had patients who installed TVs in their bathrooms for this purpose. But I don't. So that's for radiation, electromagnetic energy that's being disrupted by radiation, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's smart meters, whatever it is.
So what makes you understand that salt and baking soda can make this difference?
Well, I understand because I see the change and I see it come down. I mean, I can measure those things.
Well, before
the, but let me tell you the science.
Okay, yeah, please.
The etheric science, by the way. Radiation has a very high frequency. It's an agitated cell frequency. You know, our electromagnetic energy is being disturbed. So it's a high electrical frequency. Salt and baking soda, kitchen chemistry, are alkaline. So when you go into a bath, a strong sea salt and baking soda alkaline bath, it actually brings it back to neutralization of normalcy. Nothing exists outside of its own environment. So the stronger energy will always survive, and you're sitting in a field of alkalinity of sea salt and baking soda, so it changes the frequencies of our cells.
When did you first try that on yourself? I'm curious.
Oh, 35 years ago.
And how could you tell it was working?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, the first time I took a salt and soda bath, I felt all the long bones in my legs really in pain because the radiation was pouring out of the bones. So at a very physical level, I felt that. So don't be afraid if you take a salt and soda bath, you start feeling achy bones. Next morning, you'll feel much better. Okay, I like to do those baths before bed. But then there's the chemicals and the heavy metals. We don't do salt and soda for those. We do something a little more wild.
A little more wild than that.
Yeah, that's easy.
Oh my God.
No problem doing a salt bath. Okay, so for chemicals, I use apple cider vinegar.
How much of that?
Yeah, you could do a pint, you could do a quart, depends on how much you're exposed. Like for carbon monoxide or petrochemicals that we're walking on the streets of New York and all the cars and or on the you're sitting in traffic and the freeways in LA. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So here's again the same kitchen chemistry. Apple cider vinegar is an acid. Heavy metals and chemicals are alkaline, too alkaline. Not alkaline in a good way, alkaline of loss of electricity at the cellular level. When we talk pH, when we talk acid alkaline, it's not the same as our food acid alkaline. Our cells are batteries. They're little tiny batteries that are flowing and giving us energy. We are ever-ready battery. So we have this acid field now that we're in, apple cider vinegar, an acid field, and now we're bringing up the vitality or bringing up the alkalinity to a normal flow of energy by doing the apple cider vinegar bath. That's a lovely bath. Then we have a very controversial bath, which I have written about, which is called the Clorox bath.
No, you don't want to put Clorox on your skin.
I'm not putting Clorox on my skin. I'm putting Clorox in the bath.
But then you put your skin in the bath.
Yeah, but it's only a half a cup in a full tub of water.
Okay. Diluted.
Hang on. What's Clorox?
I actually have no clue.
Okay. Shall I tell you?
Please.
Sodium chloride is what? Sodium chloride
is
salt.
Oh.
The biggest ingredient comes from sodium chloride.
There's a lot of salt in Clorox.
Clorox is salt.
Oh.
But they put electrical probes to bring oxygen there. So now it becomes sodium hyperchlorate. And that's Clorox. So it's an oxygenating salt bath.
Oh.
Which is a high energy frequency, which will neutralize heavy metals. I've seen it with patients that they've had high heavy metals, and then they've redone their labs, and low heavy metals.
Crazy.
So we do a Clorox bath once a week, for sure.
It's so funny, because I always think that Clorox is something I don't want to use.
Well, it can be caustic.
Yeah.
It's caustic. Uh-huh. You can't just pour it on. But it's an oxygenating salt bath that neutralizes heavy metals. And I've used it for 40 years, and my teacher before me used it 50 years before that. So when, yeah, Dr. Hazel Parcells used Clorox baths. And there's always been a lot of controversy because people think Clorox is just another chemical. But the frequency of Clorox is not in the chemical field. It's in the high electrical field, which, yeah. I use a circle of 360 degrees. Full potential energy is at 360. Clorox reads at 360. It's not a chemical. We're not talking chlorine in your swimming pools here. That reads at a very low frequency. So when we're talking, this is a new science of measuring etheric energy, measuring electromagnetic energy, and it's really important for for the future of our planet.
Well, it's a huge thing. I mean, I have had my share of experiences with energy healing modalities personally. I have many friends who have as well. And, you know, it always sort of stays on some level for me in this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's woo, like, woo.
Well, it's definitely woo. I have no context for it outside of like, oh, well, just, you know, energy is information. Something
it
is
sure
flowing
is.
Here. People can, you know, some bodies, people can develop the capability to work with, tap into this field effectively, mm-hmm. understand what's happening in the energetic level of a patient or a client, move things inexplicably but beautifully. There's a spiritual connection that has to do with the healer's own practice and essentially access to certain levels of spiritual information effectively and their ability to channel that on some level. But it's always somehow beyond the rational grasp. This is how I've encountered it in my own experience, right? Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating about what you've been doing is bringing that engagement with energetics into a more, shall I say, you know, scientifically framed or grounded approach that enables you to actually even prescribe things based on their energetic components, right? Which is not something you often hear in the, I mean, at least I don't, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'm just not exposed to it enough, but that's not something I hear that often. Mm-hmm. From the energetic perspective and understanding energy as a key piece of a wellness practice that involves, okay, well, you know, you should be taking baths on certain dates or regularly in order to clear the certain kind of thing, reading the energy of a blood sample. Even in the East, you know, in China or in India, where this energetic understanding is still far more prevalent even among medical practitioners. I'm not aware of many practices coming from there to here that would work within a more conventional medical context, right? So your innovation here is fascinating to me. Do you have any doctors in your family?
No.
How'd you get into medicine?
Being sick.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I had colitis when I was a teenager from a fractured home life, you know. And so I found peace in many ways. I was always looking for peace. And I found the peace of yoga, breathing techniques, was my first healer. And then being involved in building an ashram on Long Island back in the early 70s, I realized that everybody looked sick.
You know, the ashram?
Yeah, vegetarian substitutes and bad food. My mother was Italian, so we always had good food at home. But that was not enough for my emotional field. However, I realized that it was not enough just to meditate, that our body is a temple and we need to take care of it. In fact, that's cosmic law. We have a responsibility to take care of our bodies. And so I found my yoga in the kitchen. I ran the vegetarian restaurant at that time. And, you know, and the name of the restaurant was Santosha, which is nonviolence, you know. And so I realized that how we were going to gain our health was through food. And so I started counseling my fellow yogis who were just paying attention to meditation and breathing alone. And it was not enough. So, and then people started coming to me. And when I had my children, I learned homeopathy because I didn't want to use drugs. And so I started, I've always been a foodie, but in a good way, and always included lots of vegetables in my programs. And then I became a homeopath. I started understanding homeopathy in a bigger way. And then I was asked to take over a holistic center in Long Island in 1980. And so...
A holistic center was essentially offering different
14
kinds of...
different modalities, you know, and I was the one who said, you go here, you go there. You
wellness
go there.
Practices.
Wellness practice.
Which
yeah.
would include, like, examples would be...
Acupuncture, colonics, herbal medicine, homeopathy, food counseling, all of it.
So this is early on, actually weaving all these together into a single kind of approach towards wellness that makes sense in the, you know, the contemporary
context. But then
context.
It was all visual. Like I said, oh, yeah, you've got to change your diet. This is going on. And then I experimented.
When you say it was visual, you were looking at people and you were picking stuff up.
Yes.
You were seeing auras. You were seeing energetics at that point.
Seen that.
You were seeing that. Okay, don't be shy.
Yes.
So I'm trying to understand this. This is an amazing thing. So at a certain point, this began, you must have had a moment where you went, whoa, I'm seeing this energy. This is interesting. I could tell if that guy's sick.
I was 11.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
Oh, boy. Oy, oy, oy. Here's this little Jewish girl from Brooklyn.
Italian Jewish girl.
Italian, half Jewish, who was kind of running away from or finding places to hide from an abusive household. And I used to go to the church because I found solace in the church.
Catholic church?
Catholic church, and I was Jewish because at that time. And And I just used to sit in front of Mother Mary, and then Mother Mary woke up. Yeah, and said, don't cry anymore. I go, okay, this is temporary. Yeah, so I started to be able to see energy fields at that time.
So so you had there was a powerful opening, awakening.
Yeah, it was. There's more to that story, but, you know, we won't talk about that here. I talk a little bit about, not that part, but my beginning years of how I was looking for that peace that I found in the convent. And I found that in yoga. I found that in the breathing. I found that in the practice of yoga. I did Raja Yoga, which was, you know, the nine limbs of yoga. So there was a lot of discipline. Niyamas and yamas. And
this is in your 20s.
Early.
Early 20s.
Yeah.
I bring this up because... there's for those of us who begin to work with it, the kinds of practices that you offer, and you start to feel the difference in your body, and then you start to notice your increased sensitivity to energy, and you start to pick it up in a kind of more visceral way over time, and then you start to get these sort of this kind of crack in the sky moments where you go like, oh, wait a minute, this is connecting to these other aspects of spirituality, which I had not yet incorporated or been recognized in my life. And you start to, it shifts your whole global, your world perspective. And it can happen for most people, I think, in a kind of incremental way.
Yes.
But to open the door to this kind of work with the sort of certainty that you bring to it and the clarity of your approach being so grounded in your innate experience, it makes so much sense that you had a real powerful, insightful thing hit. And before you developed this whole approach to wellness,
yes.
There was something you already were carrying that you knew that other people weren't seeing, that gave you a sense of certainty around what is working and what's working even before you were able to show it in the lab. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, yeah, I would say a destiny and a responsibility, because I promised my teachers that I would carry through. And, you know, I spent 10 years with Yogi Bhajan, for instance, as his integrative physician. And Yogiji taught me lots about reading energy also, because I would go to read his energy and he'd show me things.
Interesting. You know,
I could just watch his energy flow all through his body, and it was just an amazing experience to spend those years with him.
This is the man who brought Kundalini Yoga to America.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was in New Mexico?
Yes.
Which is why you moved there?
No. Ah. I moved there because Dr. Hazel Parcells was living in Albuquerque, and I wasn't going to live in Albuquerque. I moved to Santa Fe. And Yogiji heard about me and asked for me to come and do an analysis on him. And I walked in the door. He was quite an amazing man. And very, very strong character, and you would be afraid. Most people were afraid of him. I mean, he had a growl almost, you know.
Rough exterior?
Yes, quite. He was hardcore Kundalini yoga. I mean, he really brought the understanding of Kundalini yoga to the world. So when I walked in, he had all his entourage there. Everybody was dressed in white with white turbans. And I didn't have a white turban on, but I certainly wore white. I didn't want to stick out like a sore thumb. So I walked in, and he says, come, 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 come. He says, I've been waiting for you. You've been in my astrology. Okay, here, take my blood.
Okay, right there.
Right there.
Did you have a needle?
No, I did bring my stuff because I thought I was just going to see him alone like I normally see a patient.
But this was in the big room with a lot, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then I had to go back and give him the report within the big room with all the people.
Oh, how did that go?
Well, it was very interesting. So I came with my report, and I said, well, first I want to say that we have some kind of karma together. He goes, never mind all that crap about karma. He goes, just tell me what's going on. So I gave him my list of all the things that were going on with him and how we were going to get him to be able to travel back to India, because his doctor said he could not travel anymore. And he looks at all his people, and he looks at his, even the doctors that were there that were at his feet. And he goes, see, you stupid idiots, one blood spot. And look what she has given us. He says, now let's get going and get me back to India.
So what did you do for him? What did he do in terms of the practices?
Well, I had to clear heavy metals and radiate.
The bats?
I says, you're loaded with aluminum. He goes, how is that possible? He says, we don't use aluminum pots. Well, I says, can I look in your kitchen? So I looked in the kitchen and I found a bunch of aluminum big pots, had those removed. He was furious.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because aluminum has a drying effect. That's why they use it in deodorants, because it dries the perspiration. And so when we're ingesting aluminum, our organs are drying, our arteries are drying. And you may think, oh, this is no big deal. It's just a piece of aluminum foil here. But if we understand energy, there is a frequency on that aluminum. And that frequency will go into the food, and it will also, we will also ingest it. So I'm a big anti-aluminum person.
Clearly. Yeah. So you prescribed the baths for him?
I did not prescribed the baths because he was not well enough to do the baths.
Oh.
Because of, I didn't want him to go into a hot bath. And so I used homeopathy. I became his number one homeopathic physician. And so we can use homeopathics to neutralize too. We can use the homeopathic remedy Alumina 30X, and it will neutralize aluminum. But I, to take aluminum every day, it's a lot easier to just take a bath once a week. And you may get other benefits from taking a bath and stopping your life for a minute. Yeah, so we neutralized the heavy metals. He had parasites also. I had to neutralize that. I did a lot of radionic work, which is long-distance healing for him. And we got him back up, and he went to India 3 more times.
It's a long trip.
Before he passed.
Yeah.
He was supposed to, according to his astrology, pass just around the time I met him. So he always was, he was very grateful to have those extra years to bypass that. You know, being a Mahatantra master, they take on a lot. And so his health really was suffering at the time. It's known he had a triple bypass when I met him, before I met him.
I would think the most healers, one way or another, take on a lot. One way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I would think...
No.
No?
I hope not.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because, you know, if you're constantly putting yourself
in... No, but it's cosmic law. It's you taking responsibility for your health. I am only the teacher. Physician means teacher. Teach you how to live. This book is about teaching you how to live and survive in our world today and connect you to your spiritual path.
So all of this is in the book. The bads are in the book?
Yes.
And the approach to that is in the book, and the other
even the milk cleanse.
The milk cleanse is in the book.
It is in the book.
Does it matter, goat or cow? Does it make a difference?
I like goat. I love goats.
Why goat over cow?
Well, goats is closer to mother's milk. However, if you can't get goat, get the best organic cow milk you can get. It's the milk the worms love. The parasites love milk. They just come out and play.
Crazy.
I know. It is the most peaceful cleanse I've ever done. You know, you just feel like you're a baby again. It's a rebirth. It's a reboot. I have a lot of my sort of celebrities who say, Dr. Linda, can I do the milk cleanse? I'm going to have a, you know, Vogue shoot, you know, cover of Vogue. Please let me do the milk cleanse.
I mean, they can do it on their own.
They can.
Yeah, but they
come to
you.
I usually send them. Yeah. Is it okay? I go, yes, it's okay. You don't have to have me to do a milk cleanse.
So you have been developing this as a practice for decades.
Yeah, for 38 years.
And you've been part of a growing network of healers and doctors who are appreciating more and more the energetics of health.
Yes.
And the importance of bringing in these other lineages, these other modalities outside of the conventional Western medical frame in order to essentially
There's nothing
shift.
Wrong with seeing a Western medical doctor. I like to get their observation. And then I love to see them say, wow, it's gone. You know, I love to collaborate. I mean, there's more and more doctors today that are looking at the energetics. I work with a lot of physicians, so.
Do you find that physicians, more conventional physicians, are coming to you asking for
my
training?
To
understand
this?
How has that developed for you? Are you surprised by the amount of interest more recently? Or are you seeing less than you'd like? I mean, where is that on the scale towards a shift in the broader paradigm? Where do you feel we're at right now?
Depends on who's looking at it. We know that pollution is causing illness. We know that poor quality food is causing illness. There are still some who says doesn't matter whether it's organic or conventionally grown. I do not agree with that. But more and more doctors will say, you know, well, if it's working, that's fine. They tell their patients, who are actually my patients, say, well, keep doing what you're doing because it's working. So I'm finding more of an openness for sure. I'm finding that people really want to know. But more so than anything, this book is about self-help. You know, if you do every, you know, it's focused on a liver cleanse because the liver is so important. You know, our liver is our biggest detoxification organ we have. Well, the skin, we can call it detoxifying or eliminative organs of releasing toxins. But the liver metabolizes carbohydrates, proteins, fats, and stores vitamins and minerals. It also filters heavy metals, chemicals, and radiation. And our toxic thoughts and feelings.
Really?
The liver is one of our most esoteric organs we have.
How does the liver do that piece of it?
It has, that's the nature of it. It's the solar plexus. It's in the solar plexus chakra. You know, and that's the only way we're going to move higher is by detoxifying and processing. You know, Shakespeare, he said, the gall of him. You know, we need to clean our gallbladder out because there's anger there in many people. So when we are doing these cleanses, when we're cleaning out our liver, we change our thoughts, we change our feelings. We say, I'm doing this because I want purity. It's called sattva, you know. It's the sattvic nature that we are best at. We are at our best when we are sattvic. Not too active, not too tamasic, which is slow, lazy, or not overly New York style, but just being in the middle, just really walking the middle road as the Buddha told us to do.
So this is the Ayurvedic way of looking at...
It's all the same. Mm-hmm. There is no difference between Ayurveda or Buddhism or Christianity, according to Richard Rohr. Do you know Richard Rohr?
I do a bit, but maybe you could let us all share.
He's
that.
A Trappist monk in Albuquerque who talks about energy. In fact, his quote is my first quote in the book. And he was also real good friends with Father Thomas Keating, who is contemplative prayer. And Father Thomas was my patient until he just passed last year at 96. And he taught me, because everybody teaches me, all my patients teach me. And Father Thomas said to me, I says, you know, Father, there are times that I cannot sit down in meditation. I just am so busy. He goes, as soon as you think of doing it, God appears.
That's beautiful.
So he says he's with you then.
I did it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic, right? And then, so then I used his simple meditation, because a lot of the people who will be reading this book maybe doesn't have a practice. And so I teach in the book, I use Father Thomas Keating's meditation because he said it's really important to get down on the floor and sit on your pillow and meditate. So in contemplative prayer, you know, he did silent retreats up in Snowmass, Colorado. And so the meditation is so simple. You get down on the floor. Okay, God is here. You imagine a river, and the river's flowing. So you're just quietly look at the river, feel the river. All of a sudden, a thought comes in, because that's what happens in meditation. Don't think you're having a bad meditation just because a thought comes in. You know, it's like the Zen master saying, don't think about the monkeys. And about the monkey on your back, and you know the whole way you're thinking about the damn monkey on your back. And so you're there, and a thought comes in. Look at the thought. And then on the side of the river, you have a little boat. And take that thought and put it on the boat, in the boat. Let it go down the river. Get back to the river.
I love that.
And it works. It's one of the most peaceful meditations without any kind of stipulation of a religion or anything. It's just you in control of learning about yourself and your thoughts and being with yourself.
Is there a particular breath aspect to it, following a breath, can you, any sort of?
No, but there are other, but I do talk about breath in another part. But no, you just simple breath and focus on the river. Have that peace. You're on the riverbank. So we were on the riverbank, right, Ken?
Apparently so. So we're on the riverbank. I was thinking about the conference that you organize.
Yes.
Every year.
Yes.
Because there is this growing community of practitioners, wellness practitioners, who are essentially helping to develop this shift in the paradigm. And you bring them together every year at a conference where they can connect with each other and can connect with a community of practitioners.
Like-minded practitioners. Mm-hmm. And spiritual leaders.
And spiritual leaders. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my organization, nonprofit, is called Global Foundation for Integrative Medicine, GFIM. And the website is gfimusa.com because we're trying to bring it to other countries. We've already developed it in Mexico. So there's GFIM Mexico, but there's GFIM USA because that's what I'm doing here. And I have for the last 30 years gathered people around of practitioners and so forth. And we share for this conscious symposium, which is what it's called, what we're doing is asking the question, what is the connection of health and spirituality? So part of that, of course, is for me, and better connect with the etheric field, because the etheric field is where it all comes from. That's life force. But so we're having this conference, which, by the way, it's been insane launching a book and launching a conference again and still having full-time practice. So the conference is April 27th at Currents at Chelsea Piers. Tickets are available at gfimusa.com.
And who are the kinds of people who are showing up? Who's going to be there?
Well, opening ceremony is my friend Robert Mirabal from the Taos Pueblo, who lives without electricity in the Pueblo and is a Grammy Award-winning writer, a flute player writer. So, and he is what he calls himself is a sky shaman. So he will come in and tell stories about the corn and about the sky and play his flutes. He's got many flutes. So he'll do a performance at the beginning. And then we have our keynote speaker is Richard Brown, the psychiatrist, and with his wife, Dr. Gerberg. And they clear trauma through breath. He's quite an established, or they are quite established in being able to clear trauma in large groups. So he will be doing that in our conference. We have Guru Dharam, who is a Kundalini yogi therapist, acupuncturist. Then one of the world, I would say, renowned acupuncturist is Lonnie Jarrett, who's written books on destiny. Then we have the one and only Dietrich Klinghart, because he knows everything there is about pollution and autism and Lyme's, and he'll be telling us about the nanoparticles of aluminum in our air. Yeah, so, and he recommends Clorox baths.
Awesome.
And then there is, who else is there? Terry Tempest Williams. Do you know who she is?
She's a writer.
Fantastic writer. Very successful writer. She's an environmentalist. Terry has single-handedly gone up against the government and tries to stop pipelines in national parks. And she's just quite amazing. She teaches at Cambridge and lives the rest of the time in Utah, in the magical lands of Canyonlands of Utah. And me.
Yeah, clearly.
I'm good. Well, I don't usually lecture at my conferences.
You don't?
Not for years. But now, because the book has come out, I'm feeling as though I need to just share the information. I try to gather the people. I've never really promoted myself, so this is really weird for me. So, doing these podcasts and videos and TV shows and radio shows,
No, but it's a great thing to be able to have you step out and share what you've been doing, because you can present it now in such a in an integrative way. You've woven all these different things together into a coherent conversation where you can really talk about the energetics of health through your experience.
Yeah, interesting you use the word coherent, because your cells are either coherent or incoherent. And that is because of pollution. So I use that terminology of coherency at the cellular level.
And when you say this, when you talk about pollution and the environment and how this is affecting us, I can't help but think about how it's also affecting all the other animals and
yes.
plants on the planet.
We're losing many species.
Dramatically.
This is the reason.
That the number of animals on the planet has dropped by what? Half in the last 50 years? Mm-hmm. Like some staggering number.
It's going to go bigger because of the 5G coming in. And probably 6G and 7G and 8G. I'm sure it's all going to happen. You know, when they put satellites in our atmosphere and we can be on Mount Everest and say hello to your mother on the phone.
Is the satellite itself that powerful?
It's military equipment, yes.
And it's really affecting the health
of our environment.
Of our environment so dramatically?
It really is. But, you know, that's going to take years for scientists to prove. So while they are proving it, because it will come as knowledge, hopefully before we don't destroy everything, understand that there are tools in Harmonic Healing book that will help you survive these times.
The title is Harmonic Healing.
Yes.
Can you tell me, what does that mean to you when you say harmonic healing?
It's healing through vibrations in a harmonic vibration of sound and light. You know, my company, my institute is called Light Harmonics, and I started the company in 1987. So it was fitting for us to do harmonic healing as the title.
So all energetics have a frequency.
Anything with a life force has a frequency.
And the frequencies have a harmonic element to them.
Yes.
And can you tell when you measure when something is essentially in a harmonic vibration?
Yes.
As opposed to a non-harmonic?
For sure.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you can measure the incoherency at a cellular level through the blood sample with a pendulum. It'll go negative. The frequency will go to the negative field towards zero, which is towards death.
It's that quick to pick up?
It's that quick.
So that would be something that a lot of people could test.
And can do. We did a pendulum class at Alchemist Kitchen.
That's right. Yeah. I know, it was awesome.
And we also talked about the endocrine system and the energetics of the etheric field through the endocrine system from the chakras. We had a big following on that, Ken.
Oh yeah, totally. No, this
is kind of from the cat's meow. This is the overview of it all. And we're having a book launch. Yay!
Yes.
My first book launch at Alchemist Kitchen on April 24th at 8 o'clock. And included in the fee is a book.
Perfect. Well, people should come. See you there.
And Lou, of course, is doing the Q&A.
Lou Sagar, our partner
in
Alchemist Kitchen, runs the Alchemist Kitchen.
Yeah.
He will be interviewing you, talking with you about your book there at the Alchemist Kitchen on the 24th.
Yes, which is part of the Evolver Network, for
sure. It's all part of the same
thing. We're all one on planet Earth for now.
We've been other places before.
Well, we
We're
going to
be other places later on. We're here now.
Why don't we enjoy each moment and give positive energy and light energy to everyone we come into contact with?
Why don't we? Linda, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So great to have you here with us. Where can people find you and find out more about your book?
It's everywhere. Alchemist Kitchen will be carrying the book.
You got a website?
Well, you can just go to lightharmonics.com. We have it all there. LIGHTHARMONICS, lightharmonics.com. That's me. That's the Institute. And we will be posting big classes in the fall in New York City.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. I want to thank Linda Lancaster for being with us on the show today. And I want to thank you, too, for being with us. You can find out more about Linda at her website, lightharmonics.com. I also want to thank our producer, Jose Alfaro, and the Acast team. Our theme music is Measure by Measure by Paul D. Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, from his album The Secret Song, and our interstitial music are tracks by The Human Experience, Sunu from the album Soul Visions with Rising Appalachia, and Here for a Moment on the album Gone, Gone Beyond. Please check them out. That's all for now. We'll be back next week.
Find the others.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.